sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Another week. And another record for the S&P 500. The S&P PE now 18 and climbing. China's manufacturing is still slowing, but that doesn't seem to have any effect on stocks. We're going to talk about this and so much more on episode number 379 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there. Andrew Horowitz here, and you are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It is just after Labor Day. And here we are in September of 2014, and lots of things have been percolating around. Not much is affecting markets, as we know that. You know, it seems that any of the bad news is there for a day or so, and pretty much just, ignored, to say the least. You know, we've had all the things that have happened in Russia and the ongoing tensions throughout the Middle East. And we've had some discussion by the Fed saying that they may be looking to actually raise rates sooner than expected. Matter of fact, we talked about how Blackstone is actually thinking that it's going to be a sharper and quicker rise than many have anticipated, and that's something that they're setting up and concerned about. You know, it's interesting because I've been having discussions with a variety of clients, and I've been talking about their thoughts on things like what's going on with the equity markets here in the U.S. and abroad, as well as the fixed income markets. But I've also had discussions with some other people in the industry. Now, these people in particular were brokers. They were not advisors. Now, not that it's good or bad. It really doesn't matter. But I just want to tell you that what's interesting is I have found that many of the brokers out there that work for the big companies are really concerned about the whole idea that bonds are going to turn around so quickly and are going to really demolish those that have any kind of investments in any kind of fixed income in a, you know, whether it's a short term or a long term, that they're saying, hey, get out of it. You don't want to be anywhere near that. The only place to be is equities. Okay. Now, whether or not they are looking to maybe drum up some commissions or whether they're actually believing that what they're seeing is that a bond market is extremely stretched right now, considering the fact that the economic condition in the U.S. has been improving. We're seeing that the employment numbers are better. We're seeing that the Fed is actually not buying bonds at the rate they were buying just a few months ago. And, you know, all the things that we've been talking about and the concern we've had at the yields at these levels and as low as they are. You know, considering all the things that we have looked at and seen recently in the economic area, as well as the fact that we have also witnessed that there is quite the bullish sentiment when it comes to equities. It's a real mind bender how fixed income continues to be bought and how we are seeing that yields continue to come down. In fact, just a little segue here, in Europe, we're seeing some of the lowest yields on record. That's kind of interesting. When you think that the German yield, the Italian yield on the 10-year are lower than the yield on the U.S. 10-year, that's pretty substantial. Now, why is that? Well, there's a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons is that all of the monetary policy that has been going on in Europe has been targeted directly to the banks. We know that. And we talked about this about a year ago with Das, as a matter of fact, and a few other guests. One of the big things was that they were maybe not directly told to go out and buy the bonds of the European countries. But when the bailouts happened of the various banks back when the ECB basically said that they will do anything they can and they put together all the various programs, one of the things that happened was that the banks went out and took their money that was being pushed into their banks and they bought all the bonds of the areas with the countries they were in and the euro region. That obviously had a major effect on the bond yield. And it kind of cascaded and came down very strongly. And the yields came down and the bonds went up in value. If you remember Italy, Greece, Cyprus, Portugal. Remember how those bonds were, and Spain, were pretty much crashing. And all of a sudden, they turned around so dramatically, and they haven't stopped since. So now when you take that, and that the money that is coming from the government is going to the banks to bail them out, which is then going back to the governments, you can see how some of this is happening. There is an artificiality of, if that's really a word, but there's an artificial sense of what is going on here, that the money is going in from one pocket to another. It's kind of like washing your money. And the ECB has done a great job of convincing people that they will stand behind everything. Mario Draghi, every single time he talks, he's believed whether or not he actually does something or not. He's really come to the table with a plan to really invigorate the economy a few times and actually only put his money where his mouth was once or twice. Last time being only a few months ago. Now, again, we're seeing that Europe is in a situation where they're in a deflationary environment. The economies are slowing down. A lot of that is due to the fact of the sanctions that are being put on to the companies that do business with Russia, or Russia, the companies that do business with Europe. And that is really hurting their economy. And as such, what's happening is that Europe is coming to the rescue. Now, when we look at the yields, and getting back to the discussion of where bond yields are, the reason I bring this up is that if you think about it for a second, if there are all of these brokers and maybe advisors and various money managers that are talking about their concern about bonds, again, we're not seeing that necessarily in the bond market, but if we're hearing about that and their alternative is to be investing somewhere else, the question is where else? Well, it's going to be equities. And I started thinking about that and I started wondering, you know, what is going on that there seems to be an unending bid to the equity markets? We've seen two different mini, micro, small, little, tiny, little corrections this year in a market that seems to be relatively valued very fairly until recently, where the PE is now 18 on the S&P 500, which is towards the upper end. And depending on how you look at it, whether you want to look at like the Shiller PE, which is showing a extreme overvaluation, or you want to look at just the trailing and look at what most people look at, 18 is getting towards the high end. It's not the highest in history, but it's getting towards the high end of normal. There was an article that I thought really hit the nail on the head very well just over this weekend. And the title of it was Identity Crisis Hits S&P 500 as Valuations Narrow to Near Record. And one of the things they talked about was that the last 3 years of virtually uninterrupted gains for the U.S. Stock market, we've resulted in 77 record closes since 2012 and valuation quirk that some see as a sign of indiscriminate buying. Hold on to that word, indiscriminate. A measure of how many price-earnings ratios among the 50 biggest companies vary has fallen to almost the lowest level on record, which is a interesting fact that Bloomberg has come up with. This recently was written by Liu Wang and Joseph Scioli. And they say that gaps between stocks shrunk after investors shifted money out of higher value technology and internet companies and bought defensive industries such as consumer staples and utilities in a rotation that is done quite frequently. But these days it can be done with simply a click of a mouse using ETFs, exchange traded funds. And this is showing, in their opinion, that buyers are making too few distinctions among good and bad companies, and could exacerbate selling once it begins. And the manager of the Jensen Quality Growth Fund said there is less interest in trying to actually pick stocks versus just investing in markets. And he says if there were another 2008 somewhere on the time horizon, the fact that everything moves up in lockstep today probably means that everything will move in lockstep down then. And it's going to be very painful. What's also interesting is that the PE ratio among the 50 largest companies in the S&P 500, they are now deviating. That ratio is deviating from the mean by an average of about 22%, nearly the narrowest on record since they started compiling this in 1990. And there was a really good point here that a few of the people that were quoted here that talked about how where there is more of a desire to just buy a market than there is equities. And don't forget, when you look at the S&P 500, obviously, there's 500 stocks that are inside of that. Now, if you're going out and buying the futures, you're buying the S&P 500 index or an S&P 500 fund, essentially what's going to happen is that whether or not the stock that's in there, one of them, two of them, five of them, a dozen of them, are doing well, if there is a desire to buy just the index, it's all going to move up in one fell swoop. It's kind of, you know, the a rising tide raises all ships, right? But I thought what was interesting here is that there is this concept of indiscriminate buying, because many of the mutual funds right now, many of them this year are not beating the indices, and what they're trying to do is go out and buy on every dip. Now, if they do in fact buy on the dip and it's down, let's say 1%, the S&P 500, and they're able to put more money to work and the S&P 500 essentially moves up after that, they made a nice gain above and beyond what the number was that the S&P 500 is at. Now, the more than that happens, though, the more the money is going to go in that when a time happens that there is a correction, that's why you do see this cascade down very quickly, and then buying on the dip happens and it moves up. Now, keep that in mind when we're looking at the valuations, when we're looking at stocks, and what I think you should be thinking about right now, if a light bulb hasn't gone off at this point, I'm going to tell you what that should be. That if, in fact, there are companies that are in the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, whatever index is being bought en masse indiscriminately, then those stocks that are not actually performing as well and don't have the earnings, the growth outlook, but still are being bought because they are just simply inside of the index, what will happen to them when selling happens, when the commitment to the index really maybe isn't there, and all of a sudden the entire volume of buying that would go into that stock disappears? So start looking for, if you can, those stocks that don't have the quality fundamentals. Now, if there was a time when there's going to be a sell-off for whatever reason, you know, it could be, I don't know, pick your poison, whatever the reason may be, whether it's going to be understanding of what the valuation levels are, or simply there's going to be some news item, whether it's going to be the fact that the Fed is really going to lay off, you know, theoretically, whatever it may be, look for those stocks that really have risen after their earnings came out, they didn't do well, and then they just started riding back up again. Now, you could track that. You could find those that really haven't made the grade. Or, better yet, start looking at P/E ratios and find those stocks that are very high and have been rising over time. Look at the P/E ratios that have been actually moving higher, if you can look at that, because what that will tell us is that their price is continuing to rise even though the earnings aren't. That's a great clue as to what stocks are potentially going to be shortable when there is a time of when markets will start to not be as indiscriminate as they are right now. And also remember that while we're in a bear market, it looks like things can't ever get better. What's going to change? How is this going to all of a sudden? I can't, you know, a lot of times what happens is you think to yourself, I can't really understand what would be the catalyst for stocks moving up again now or in the future. But yet, maybe they do. Remember something, when you're in a bull market, probably thinking, I can't really imagine what the catalyst would be if stocks were going to move down. What would make that happen? So far, we are proven wrong by thinking that would be a news item out of Russia, news item out of Middle East, the quick spike in oil prices. No, none of that happened. Not even some congressional stalemates and problems, not even the healthcare that everybody said was going to bust the economy, not even slowing down this or slowing down that. China's numbers we saw over the weekend look pretty rough in terms of the fact that they're continuing to move down after a quick turn to the upside. And remember something, that China's numbers were really abysmal for about a year and a half. There was a mini stimulus package or at least some kind of government effort to try to prop up the real estate sector and to try to flush in some liquidity, and a lot of movement inside of the area of infrastructure development. And what we did see was that a turnaround in the economics occurred. We saw that the PMIs went over 50 after they cracked the 50 level for a number of months. And they went higher for about 2, 3, 4 months. And now they're starting to turn around the other direction. Now, of course, in a bullish market, that doesn't matter. The idea is, okay, they're settling out. They're doing well. They're over 50. Kind of like the same thing when we hear about the different things inside of a bull market when at one point, okay, you know, a bad economic number is actually good. A good economic number is good. There's going to be a time that that doesn't really hold up. Same thing with earnings. When a bad economic number is bad, actually, and a bad earnings number is bad, that's when you'll know that there is a change in sentiment. But so far, there's so much liquidity in the markets that what we're finding is that the bullish sentiment and the overriding zeal for buying stocks, and again, whether or not it is directly in one company or indiscriminate, is showing that there is a significant amount of bullish sentiment out there, so much so that it's getting a little bit scary, frankly. Now, I'll mention that before we get to some of the economics that are coming up, of course, it is the time when a lot of traders come back from holidays, starting about this week and next week, we're going to start to see probably volumes pick up. And that's going to be a very interesting time because there is a well-known kind of vacation time in the mid to end of August. Volumes are a little bit soft when it comes to indices and stocks themselves because a lot of traders are taking a little bit of time off to recoup. They're looking to spend a little time out in their vacation home, whether it's up in New York or somewhere else around the country, around the world. And oftentimes what happens is when they come back, we start to see where the next direction is going to be for the next couple of months towards the end of the year until we get into maybe the end of November into December. And oftentimes there is a lot of window dressing, a lot of changes that go on there. We get the old quote-unquote theoretical Santa Claus rally coming towards the end of the year. But this is where we find that there is a lot of direction that will be looked for. And you're going to find that there's going to probably be some additional volatility, some choppiness in markets. Because at this point, even though we did see that there was a record made on the S&P 500 last week again, light volume really was the overall indicator that showed us that there wasn't a lot of commitment to that. But that's also been something that's gone on for a long time. That's okay. But when they come back and we do see them all settling back in their chairs at their desk with their keyboards ready to go with the buy and sell orders, and they're looking to clean up either gains for the year, lock in some profits, or go out and chase for gains. In other words, finding stocks that maybe they not necessarily owned and they see that would be excellent to have, maybe looking to make up for some lost time. Well, we're going to find out really how that plays out, probably starting in the mid part of September. Now, with that in mind, one of the catalysts that we're going to probably see is that there's going to be a reaction to what we are going to find out at the end of this particular week. Because the granddaddy of economics that everybody looks to see how the country is doing, aside from GDP, which came in at 4.2% on the second read, last week, which was a bit higher than anticipated. A lot of economists had thought that, you know, wow, we got a 4% read after a pretty ugly first quarter. Second quarter looked a lot better. Yet we're seeing that some of the inventory numbers and some of the housing numbers and some of the numbers that go into the GDP number weren't as good. Yet we did see a 22% print on durable goods, which was an aberration. Let's face it. Fact was that a lot of that was from transportation. That was a gigantic number of Boeings that were ordered in July, and that warped the numbers and really skewed it very dramatically. When we look at underneath that, at the actual core of the durable goods numbers, it wasn't that impressive at all. But again, we're in a bull market. We're kind of in a shark feeding frenzy in a sense that it really doesn't matter. So we did see that GDP was at 4.2, and that is a signal around the world that things are going pretty well in the U.S. But the second part of it, and there's three basic points here that we're going to look at. We're going to look at GDP, housing, and employment. Three really important numbers when it comes to looking at whether or not we're going to be buyers or sellers of stocks from an economic standpoint. And when I say we, I don't mean us. I mean the masses. Many money managers are going to look at that. They're going to look at, okay, how is employment? Is it improving? How's the housing market? That's a big part of things. Is that improving? And, of course, you know, what's happening with GDP? That's on the economic side. Of course, they look at earnings, too. Earnings we're going to look at and say, okay, what's happened? Earnings increasing. We see the revenue increasing. We see that the S&P 500, for example, is going to be estimated to be going higher in terms of earnings per share on the S&P itself. These are all the things that go into the big macro picture of how much of a buyer of stocks we're going to be. We're going to have 70% exposure, 50% exposure. We're going to have a 90% exposure. And this isn't even talking about technicals. We're talking about just fundamentals, and we're just talking about very big picture here. This is how managers do things. They look at the big picture, and then they start going down from there. They start at the top, and they say, okay, well, what's happening economically? What's happening around the world? What are we looking at in the future? What are we looking at from an earnings standpoint, from a overall basis of the S&P, individual stocks, who are the leaders, what are the strong stocks, what are the weak stocks? They go through all of this and then come up with an asset allocation model. And they then target how much they're going to put in stocks, bonds, cash, international. So this other point that is going to be very important coming up this week is the employment number. Now, the employment number is something that we can kind of look at a number of different ways. The first thing is clearly how many people are currently working, how many people are in the labor force, how many people are unemployed, etc. How many new people coming on are part-time? At the end of the day, we're in a bull market. I said it again, indiscriminate buying is going on. So really what we're going to look at is the top line number, right? We're going to look at what's the unemployment rate. Currently it's 6.2%. The expectation is to go to 6.1%. Now this is the number that the Fed has signaled right around here. Hey, you know what? This is where we're going to stop all the excess stimulus. This is where we're going to start maybe looking at no longer bond buying, and we're going to possibly increase rates, because that's the point where we're going to start moving some of the excess and extraordinary levels of stimulus and the super low ZIRP, ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, from where it is, maybe a little bit higher. Expectations are that we're going to see a change in non-farm payrolls of about 225,000 people added. Last month we saw 209,000. Again, this is on Friday. And average hourly earnings, something that's very important to look at because we're looking at wage growth. One of the things you see is there's a lot of discussion of that wages have been really stagnant. But we're going to supposedly see a 0.2% increase month over month. And that goes along with the fact that when you have a tighter employment market, what happens is that you have to pay people more money. And as the employment market, it's just like a simple supply demand. As the employment market gets tighter and tighter and tighter, you see that wages will increase. That's something that everybody has been looking for, because as wages increase, you have more discretionary income to spend. With more discretionary income to spend, obviously consumers can go out and buy a lot more. And as 3/4 of our entire economy is made up of consumer spending, that's something that's very important. So we're expecting to see that the average hourly earnings on a year-over-year basis increases by about 2%. Now, is that a lot or a little? How does that really play out? Well, it's really not a lot, but it's good that we're seeing increases versus just stagnation. 2%, you take that and you multiply that by all the people working and their salaries, well, they're not bad. That's something that's very important, because when you combine the fact that you're seeing that the employment market and labor market is getting better, and the fact that there is actually an increase in the wages, what you're going to find is the final discussion here and the final realization will be that you're going to see inflation. Now, people have more money to spend, and as they have more money to spend, they're buying more things. As they're buying more things, what happens is that there's less sales that go on, less discounts that go on, and more of an opportunity for retailers and those that deal with the public to actually raise their prices, like Chipotle did recently. Stock took off like a banshee. I mean, really, they raised their menu price and things just went crazy. Maybe there'll be less things on the dollar menu at McDonald's. As they can increase prices and maintain a lower input cost from manufacturing or raw materials that go into whatever they're selling, that means higher profits. Margins are better. That's good for companies. Now, if all that plays out, that's going to be a good thing. So we have increase of the amount of people are working, a tighter labor market, lower unemployment rate, and we have that they're spending more money because their wages are increasing because we have the supply demand of the fact that there's less people available to fill positions. And of course, then you have to go and try to poach people or hire people at a higher wage. That's good. Kind of like when you're buying and selling a house, when you hear about a buyer's market or a seller's market. So there's going to be a lot of economics that are starting on Tuesday. You're going to see the ISM manufacturing number come out. And you should be writing a few of these down because these are important. ISM manufacturing is an important number. Expectations are for that to be a 57, which is pretty good. Over 50 is expansion. Under 50 is contraction. Anything over 50, and especially when you get higher and higher, that's good. Prices paid are expected to dip down a little bit, which is actually good for margins, although not good overall when you look at if they're not able to pass on prices. But if they are, in fact, able to, because we all the things we just talked about, that means that profitability will be better at corporations. Factory orders are expected on Wednesday at 10 a.m. We're expecting to see a pretty substantial increase here. 10%, in fact. Last month, it was 1%. So there's both factory orders that seem to be rising, and we're going to also see construction spending that is expected to rise by 1% versus down 2% last month. Then you can see on Wednesday more things. You're going to see ADP. ADP is coming out with their private employment, their employment change. They're looking at 225,000. Initial jobless claims have been kind of hovering around the 300 mark. That's on Thursday. Actually, excuse me, the ADP is on Thursday this week because of the holiday. And then on Friday, you're going to get just a whole bunch of stuff going on with employment at the early morning hour at 8:30 prior to the market opening. And looking at the unemployment rate, underemployment rate, the average hourly earning, etc. Pay attention to Friday and Thursday. Going to be big days when it comes to the markets. We're also kind of heading into this whole Apple announcement. Next week, we're going to see that, supposedly Apple may be coming out with a watch. And there was a great commentary on, I watched CNBC's Fast Money the other day, and there's a great commentary on something. And somebody said, you know, I remember when the iPhone was coming out. And they were like, oh, what do we need another phone for? How good could a phone be? What's going to be with a phone? And the iPhone came out, and it was an entirely different animal from anything that we've seen before. It was a game changer, I mean, clearly. And it was a brand new situation, and boy, it took off, right? We know that. Then when the iPad came out, he said, you know, what do we need an iPad for? What do we need a tablet? And lo and behold, wow, everybody had to get in the tablet market because it was just an amazing business because people were loving it, and they still do. Now people are scratching their head saying, you know, what do we need a watch for? And the thing that we have to then put together is Apple going to be able to do this again? Are they going to be able to come out with a game changer, something that's going to be so important that it's going to be a game changer in a way that not only do they make a lot of money from it, but it's going to pretty much just totally take over, and we're going to have these wearables that are just going to be the next big thing in technology. There's a lot of wearables these days. We have GoPro, which has a silly camera, which, again, GoPro cracked the $50 level on the upside last week. I think it's getting a little bit ahead of itself after its last earnings, frankly, and there could be a lot of reasons why that is. But nonetheless, there's a lot of buyers for that. The idea that maybe this whole wearable thing is going to really take off. I'm not sure what you have. I'm looking forward to seeing what the iWatch is going to be. So far, I'm not impressed with all the watches that are out there, the ones that have to be coupled with your device. And, you know, maybe they're going to come out with something that's entirely different than we expect. So I'm pretty excited about seeing what's going to happen on the 9th. They're also going to be coming out with, at least this is what the discussion is. This is what we're hearing about. A bigger iPhone. The iPhone 6, the new operating system is going to probably be available that day. They'll probably do a walkthrough of what is going to possibly be the next iPhone, and they may have a couple different sizes coming out. The iPhone 6 is Probably expected to be a better camera, better processor, more storage, all the things that we're hoping for. We'll see how that goes. And Apple has been riding pretty well into this announcement, even though Apple did, in fact, guide down significantly in their recent earnings announcement. Nobody cares about that because we're just really looking at, hey, that's okay. I don't care. This iWatch and the iPhone 6 may be something significant. So these are things that are really going to be moving the market over the next week and a half, and you need to pay attention to this. And not to mention the fact that so far the sentiment that has gone in so many different Vs lately, we've seen so many Vs over the last couple of 3 years, of a market that moves down 2%, then boom, moves right back higher, or down recently down 4%, and whoop, that's a couple of days later, it's right back to the top again. What you find in those situations is that you have to wonder, again, as I mentioned, is it indiscriminate buying or something else going on? So we'll look at that. And as we're talking about the valuation levels and the fundamentals that we've been really harping on here and talking about, I'm not really, I'm being careful. I'm being careful not to say, well, the fundamentals are too high, they're too low. They are. The fact is they are a little bit on the pricey side right now. But that doesn't matter because sentiment doesn't care. You know, you hear the data doesn't matter. Well, that's where we are right now. We're in a situation where the data really doesn't matter. It will one day, but right now it doesn't. We still saw that there was some decent recovery in the housing market, a big part of the U.S. economy. We saw that there was a real drop-off in retail sales recently. Just last week, we saw a very disappointing number when it came to retail sales. And that is actually, we can see that's playing out also in many of the retail establishments. So many of them have come in recently with a negative outlook that there must be something a little bit more to what's going on here. Because if we're seeing both retail sales very disappointing, and the outlook by many of these retailers, generally speaking, I think there's something to take notice of. Is the consumer pulling back a bit? Is the consumer a little bit stretched right now? It's possible. It's probable. I've been on a tear for such a long time. But I got to tell you something. The U.S. consumer is so resilient that you never really want to bet against them too hard. Now, there's a lot of companies that are out of fashion. Some of the smaller, we'll call it teen and specialty retailers are just not being bought. Matter of fact, they're being sold at a pretty quick pace. And what we're finding is that a lot of them are looking for strategic alternatives or looking for going the potential of going private. A lot of this is kind of buzzing around these days. So keep a watch on that and also keep a watch on all the economics. All right, now. Let's kind of quickly talk about, since we're talking about valuation levels, we're talking about the fundamentals, let's talk about the technicals for a second. And then we're going to get into a discussion of last week's guest. So you know that we have something that we built called the key reversal indicator, KRI we call it. And the key reversal indicator essentially is a methodology for us to look at markets in a way that we can find where markets are getting too hot or they're too cold, when they're overbought or oversold. And we did a lot of work to try to be very strict in looking at a lot of different indications within the market and when it's getting to a point that there is a significant amount of buying pressure that is well over the levels of what we've seen before where there is a reversal. And what I mean by that is that there are times that either markets move down too quickly over a period that it is almost it's almost to a point that it is overdone. And oftentimes what happens is that you see that when that happens and when it gets so oversold, let's say, that investors will come in and say, hey, you know what? We just saw indiscriminate selling go on to a level that is extreme, and we're going to pick up some shares right here. And if it doesn't work out, fine, you know, over a couple of days, let's say, that we will pull our money out. But recently, because of the sentiment and the direction, the low interest rates that we've seen, well, we've seen that it comes up very quickly. Now, on the other hand, and not as a, this is never as good of an indication when we see overbought versus oversold. Oversold, there's always buyers that will come in. You just have buyers out there that will look for dips in the market no matter what the circumstance is. On the other hand, you have a situation where you see overbought, and sometimes you can go overbought for a very long period of time. Oversold doesn't stay as oversold at the depths that it stays for a very long period of time. It's a much quicker snapback. Always is the case. You can look at any market correction, and you know that people are just more programmed to buy than they are to sell. And today we have complacency in the market, as we can see the VIX. We can see that there is just a lack of selling that's going on in general. It takes a big news item, et cetera, et cetera. We are currently seeing that there is, with the KRI indicator, a much higher level of overbought than we've seen in a very long time, particularly throughout the entire year 2014. We saw it hit a 4 about 3 or 4 days ago. It's currently in the 2 to 3 area. And when we start seeing that there's clusters of overbought in the 3, 4, 5 level, 5 is a key area that we haven't seen yet, that when we get to that level, it's almost imminent that within the next couple of days, you're going to see some kind of a sell-off. It happens time and time again. Now, whether or not that sell-off is significant, that it is continuing, or it's just maybe a 2, 3, or 4 day event, is contingent on a lot of things. But one thing I can tell you, when we do get to those levels, the 5 and even a 6 that we've seen every so often, it's almost, you do it by just do it. You just go in by, and say, this is a time when we're going to see a sell-off. Or the reverse is true. We see a negative 5 or a negative 6 clearly. You just kind of blindly hold your nose and say, let me just put a little money to play here and see if we can at least get a trade off on markets. Now, the S&P is what we track this with. And this is now at a 2 to a 3. So we're getting very much into the overbought region, the overheating area, where I just want to let you know that probably from a technical standpoint, we're starting to get too hot. Now, again, that doesn't mean I'm not giving you a long-term discussion here. I'm giving you a short-term discussion that this is kind of where you're going to see that there's some volatility. And if we see that there is a blow-off top that happens in the next several days after all of the bullishness is there and clearly into the employment numbers that are coming out at the end of this week, that if we see that the KRI index gets there towards the 4 and 5 again, we're probably going to see a significant reversal happen very quickly within the days or a day or 2 days, 3 days possibly after that signal is generated. What we'll do is we will post that on thedisciplinedinvestor.com so that you have that information available to you. And if you want to do a quick trade on the opposite side, it's up to you. But basically, that's how we look at things and look at things to for a quick scalp, if you will. Now, last week, we had Ronnie Moas on, and he talked about the blacklist, how there was an inequity between the managers, the owners of a company, and the workers. Talked about how many of the companies are abusive of their employees, not paying them enough, and taking all the money to the management and to the owners, etc. And I had a lot of discussion with him about, well, who is the company really responsible to? Are they responsible to the shareholders, the owners, or are they responsible to the employees? I mean, let's think about that, I said. I mean, really, at the end of the day, a company is responsible to its owners. But he went on to talk about how these abuses were much deeper than that. And as expected, there were a lot of emails that came in. There was a pretty good level of emails that were in agreement with what he was talking about, discussing how that there is a tremendous amount of unfairness that is going on and that companies are doing things like these inversions, they're continuing with layoffs. They're doing a lot of technology that is requiring less and less employees to do their jobs, doing financial engineering. But at the end of the day, they're still paying their employees much less than they should be. And there's, on the other hand, a lot of people said, you know what, that's a bunch of hooey. The fact of the matter is that we are in an environment where companies are able to do things like refinance their debt, lay off people, bring on technology to replace things to increase their margins. I don't know about you, essentially, but if I'm a company, what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to make the best of everything that's out there to benefit, well, me, the owner. And how could that be a bad thing? If people are willing to work for me and they're willing to do so, well, so be it. That's what it is. And that's what the pay is that I'm willing to pay right now. And that's what my investors require, because the investors don't want me spending absurd amounts of money to have benefits and vacations and to find benefit programs in terms of pensions, all this stuff. So there was a pretty good, healthy debate on the emails, that is, back and forth. And I got to tell you something, I find it very interesting. If you have not listened to that show that we put on last week, I think you owe it to yourself to at least listen to it and then think about what's going on a global basis with companies and the employees. And a lot of this, by the way, is due to the fact that we had this really hard time that companies went through in 2007, 2008, 2009, even 2010 and 11. Companies were, you know, stretched. They did everything that they could to hold on to profitability, not only for the sake of the investors, but for the sake of the company as a whole. Because, of course, if a company can't make their payroll and they can't pay their bills, they're going to go out of business. And if they go out of business, that's not good for the employees either. That's not good for anybody, shareholders, anybody. So they did what they had to do. And at the end of the day, now, as we're talking about at the end of this week, the employment numbers coming out, clearly it's going to be beneficial that we see more people being added, more people working. Now, are they working at the level they should be working in terms of pay? And considering the fact that there is this big inequity and this significant gap between the income of, let's say, the CEO and workers in the factory, well, okay, but that's what it is. It's been like that for a long time. Maybe it's wider now and the numbers are much larger in favor of the management. But anyway, listen to that show. I think you're going to be very not only entertained, but I think you're going to find it very interesting. And of course, you can send your emails to me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com at any time about anything you want to know about, whether you want to know about some of the things we're talking about. We don't really give individual stock advice here. We do talk about stocks in general and talk about things we like and all that. And I'm going to talk about a couple in a moment. But we don't really answer those questions. So anything else, though, is fair game. I do my best to answer any of those. Of course, also on DH Unplugged, which we have each and every Tuesday with John C. Dvorak, myself, we talk about just a whole battery of things. It's kind of a fun show if you haven't listened to it yet. And this is available, and we do talk about some individual securities as well there, and actually come up with some picks each and every week that we track. Go over to dhunplugged.com and check that out too. Now, I want to finish up this week with a couple of different things. We have guests starting next week. It's in the summertime. We've had some great guests on this summer. Again, you go over to iTunes and check out all the different things that we've talked about and the people we've talked to. We have some of your favorites coming up, of course, not to mention Dawson, Frank Curzio, and John Markman, and just a whole bunch of others that will be hitting the airwaves shortly. But one of the things I want to talk about is what's going on with some of the commodities, gold, oil. You know, the dollar has been rising with the whole idea that, well, the Fed's going to be pulling back, the economy's getting better, and usually what you find is as an economy gets better, the dollar or their particular currency will also get stronger. That makes sense. And what you're finding is the dollar is getting better. That's been hurting things like oil. Gold has been in a very strange movement. We did see that there was an uptick when there was tensions out in Russia, and gold then moved above 1,300, came back down again. Gold is in a very precarious situation, as is silver right now. But yet, still, it does seem to me that there is some good opportunity holding a part of that in your portfolio, whether it's an ETF or the actual bullion, or even, for that matter, some of the gold miners that you can own and silver miners, etc. And obviously, the people in the companies inside of the materials area. If you haven't seen recently what's going on with like the steel companies, the coal companies, aluminum companies, a lot of these companies have gotten smart. What they did was they started cutting back on production. A lot of smelters have been shut down, and that is creating an artificial level of supply-demand constraint. And as such, what we're finding is that many of these companies are doing better profitability-wise, and that is good. It's, again, well, back to what we talked about a moment ago, is this really good or bad? I mean, you know, you're laying off people, you're closing the smelter operations, at least temporarily. And that's not good. But on the other hand, it is good because you're getting a benefit from the stock and the price of the particular material itself. Now, copper has been kind of moving higher, and we are seeing that with that, there has been some real good play in a lot of the companies that do the manufacturing of that, but also aluminum, which was just lagging, doing terribly for a while. You see Alcoa doing just tremendously, and even the gold companies with gold now under 1300 is still, the companies are doing very, very well. So what I wanted to mention, though, was that how the dollar itself is rising. And usually when, if you saw this kind of situation in Europe or you saw it in Japan, it wouldn't be good for their equity markets. In fact, when you see that the yen is increasing in value against the dollar, it's really, it hits the Nikkei pretty hard. But that's not the same necessarily with the U.S. Now, some of the exporters will have more trouble in that kind of an environment, but yet it also is a sense that there's more money coming into the U.S. for investment. That's why the dollar is rising. They're buying the dollar. But what are they doing with it these days? Well, they're buying U.S. bonds and they're buying U.S. stocks as well. They don't really look at the underlying companies as much as a problematic situation because they're also looking at, and investors will look at the situation and say, well, you know what? The economy is getting better. As the economy gets better, the stocks will get better because there's more opportunity. And we don't look at the dollar as so much of a headwind for most of the companies in the U.S. Now, on the other hand, you are seeing, again, that gold, even with all the things that are going on around the world and the fact that bonds are at a relative high and stocks are at a relative high, there's just it's not much really out there that's concerning to anybody that owns gold and that it's being sold. Also, I think there's something to be said about the potential for some countries selling off their gold. Now, I mentioned on DH Unplugged last week that we are entering into an interesting time because around the world, this is festival time. In India in particular, this is a time where a lot of gold is bought because marriage season is here. And if you look at the statistics, September, October, November are the best months overall to own gold. Now, I kind of sound in the last, couple of months like a gold bug. I am not, by any means. But it still seems logical. Now, not technically, because technically it's not looking so good, but logically, that we are entering into a good seasonality trade for gold and silver. And also, it is a place that could see a significant rise if any volatility hits. And in fact, there is a rollout and maybe even a rotation out of stocks or out of bonds. So just think about that. Something to think about. And take a look at the charts. And of course, if we see it, the gold can get back over 1300 again. That would probably be a really good signal that, and holds, by the way. But that would be a really good signal that there's something more to be said about what's going on and that there is an opportunity to see a rebound in gold and a rotation back in if that does occur, specifically in September and November. Those are the two better months overall. Anyway, I want to wish you a happy Labor Day. I hope you had a great weekend. Short week coming up, lots of economics. And make sure to keep an eye on all the things that we talked about in terms of the unemployment numbers that are coming out as well as the ISM manufacturing that you'll see, and of course, the valuations of the S&P 500. I'm going to end a little bit short again this week. It's summertime. We try to get them a little bit shorter in the summertime, but starting next week or the week after is kind of back into full gear on the Disciplined Investor podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you want any information about the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, Aero, or our global allocation strategies, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Maybe you're thinking, it's time for us to do something a little bit different. We've been running this long, doing great. Maybe it's a time to think about being more diversified, looking at some of technical strategies and algorithmic strategies that we offer, or maybe even looking at the opportunity to short certain markets, short certain stocks. Some of the ones that we are currently looking at is Pollo Loco, which we put a short on recently. We actually took a long position in FireEye. That is a company that does I guess the best way to describe it would be security. And with all of the hacking that's going on and the breach of security, these companies are getting some good business, although some of them aren't showing a really good market reaction. And right now we're looking at FireEye. If we can get this up a couple of points from here, the potential for a breakout is very high. So we're going to kind of just ease into that a little bit. But keep an eye on FireEye. If it does break down below 30, that's going to be a worrisome situation. But, you know, if the security news continues to be out there that there is a lot of companies that are looking to spend more to beef up their security, prevent the hacking that's going on, and to prevent all of the problems that we're seeing inside of the cloud, well, then there could be an opportunity here. So anyway, a couple of things to take a look at. Other than that, thanks for joining me. Write to me. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com so you can find out all the different strategies where we manage money directly for you, the client. You like the kind of things that we're talking about? Well, maybe it's something that you want to take a look at. Until next week, I'll see you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.